This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Inside Try Show with Sports Tours International.
This is the podcast that takes a deeper look at the sport
with in-depth interviews and special episodes
to keep you entertained and inspired while you're training.
All right, and we're off. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Inside Try Show, the weekly podcast with me, Helen Murray, sponsored by Sports Tours International and Orion Connect. I hope you're doing all right. How's life for you in lockdown? Ups and downs, good days and bad days? Yeah, sounds pretty standard. I think Zoom is like the new pub, isn't it? And seriously, I feel really quite left out at the moment, not having Zwift. But there you go. I guess there's still a little bit of time to get, probably a lot of time, to get on the bandwagon. Honestly, watch this space. I reckon it may well happen. I've actually got a virtual race, which is very exciting, coming up this weekend, and I'm looking forward to it now. It's the Storm the Castle Duathlon, which we were meant to be doing in Shropshire, beautiful part of the world. So between Friday and Sunday this week, I will be doing a 10k run and then 33k on the bike and then a 5k run to finish. So it could be interesting. Anyway, this week's show, I had a good giggle recording the interviews with Ironman announcers Paul Kay and Joanne Murphy, who just ooze energy, and stick them together and they're even more hilarious. And if you've been listening over the past month, then you will also be very familiar with the voice of David McNamee. I was about to call him something else then, a fellow Scott, who used to be my colleague. Anyway, definitely David McNamee. He is the British professional triathlete who's on lockdown in his apartment with his girlfriend in Girona in Spain. Well, I'm pleased to say that if you have been hearing him, you're not going to be disappointed this week either, because he is back on the podcast again. And he was definitely more full of beans this week. So I think you will enjoy that. So that's all coming up. Now, racing might seem a long way off at the moment. It really might. Let's be honest, this year pretty much seems to be a write-off. So listen up. If Challenge Roth has ever been on your radar, then show sponsor Sports Tours International, who are the official travel partner for Europe, they've been given permission by Challenge Roth organisers to go on sale with their packages, which allow you to buy a guaranteed entry for 2021. Now, it's going to be even harder next year to get a slot for the race, because athletes who had a place for this year have been given the option to roll their entry over to next year. So Sports Tours International have reduced the travel package deposit required to guarantee your trip. So it's 25% reduction of the usual deposit, and then you just pay the remaining balance 3 months before you travel. So if you've ever even considered Challenge Roth but you've not been able to get a place, then check out Sports Tours International Guaranteed Entry with their travel packages. All of the details will be in the show notes at helenmurray.net/InsideTryShow/announcers, or you'll find them as well at InsideTryShow.com. Okay, back to virtual racing, because it's been an exciting week for 2x podium finisher at the Ironman World Championships, croissant lover, magnum lover, Zwift convert, the brilliant David McNamee. David, week five.
Indeed. I never thought we'd get to a week five, to be honest. I had convinced it'd be 2 weeks and it'd be done, but no. We're starting week five, and yeah. To be honest, from what the Spanish government is saying, it could be extended to 8 weeks here.
So 8 weeks total?
Yep. So until the 10th of May. Right now, it's guaranteed till April the 26th.
Yeah.
But they've already said that, so it looks like it'll be 10th of May.
Okay. You did have some excitement, though, this weekend. You were racing.
I got back. I got back to races. I never thought I'd be back racing so quickly, but there I was. I got the opportunity at the start of the week to take part in the Ironman virtual reality racing series. And yeah, to be honest, it was just a nice distraction to have.
So did they get in touch with you? How did it all come about?
Yeah, so I got an email from Paula Newby-Fraser just to ask if I'd be interested. And yeah, let's be honest, sort of 2 months ago, if you said, "Do you want to do some virtual reality racing?" I'd have laughed at you. But yeah, I was sort of, yeah, it was sad how excited I was to sort of take part.
And did you know straight away who else would be doing it? Did you have any dilemma? Were you like, yeah, I'm on it. I definitely want something to actually aim for and feel like part of a community?
No, for me, yeah, like straight away I knew I would do it. It was nice to sort of, yeah, to feel part of the community, of the sort of triathlon community, which, you know, at this moment it's difficult at times because, yeah, we're all sort of spread out all around the world. And yeah, it was great to sort of feel that connection again. And yeah, I knew exactly who was racing and stuff. And yeah, it was just sort of nice. Yeah, it was a really cool experience, to be honest.
Did you say to Paula, there might be a slight issue with the run, or did you say, oh man, I'm going to have to do this on my 7 meter balcony?
Yeah, I took a few sort of emails to explain the situation. It was sort of, this thing goes like every country interprets lockdown as being different things. Just sort of trying to explain to them, like, yeah, it is literally, I spend my life in my flat. It was sort of hard to get that message across at first. And then we had a discussion of, well, can you maybe do sort of your run sections? Can you not just go for like a long walk somewhere? And I'm like, yeah, that's still against the rules here. I can't go for a 10-kilometer walk to the supermarket. So yeah, that took a bit of explaining. But yeah, once we sort of found the solution, it was sort of time to get the race face on.
But genuinely, the prospect of doing 10K on your balcony, did you think, oh man?
To be honest, like, I knew it would be cool and it'd be something different. And the 3 kilometers was like really sort of nice and stuff, and that sort of flew by. But I think doing the 10 kilometers last night was a lot more difficult. Just because like the novelty of running on my balcony had sort of completely worn off by that point. And yeah, it was a long way. 3K was nice, but yeah, 10 kilometres on my balcony was, yeah, that did actually feel like a long way.
How many times did you have to go up and down?
I'm not sure. I didn't want to try and count. Okay. I ended up going over 10 kilometres. I ended up doing like 10.4 kilometers just because I was basically running in the dark, and I didn't want to try and look at my watch while sort of running along my balcony, just so I didn't hit into anything. And yeah, it was a unique experience, not one that I'll be repeating again, that's for sure. But it was great to sort of, yeah, let's be honest, it's been 4 weeks now. I'm sort of, I need things to do.
And I think you clearly have time on your hands, because I loved, you actually laid out aid stations, you had your penalty box, didn't you? Explain the setup for those that might not have seen what your 7 metre balcony did indeed look like as the run course.
Well, yeah, I thought, well, I may as well fully commit. So I took the race director's hat on as well and sort of set up my course as it should be. So we had a nice little aid station, which had some water, some Coke, some jelly sweets. Then last night we had some chocolate eggs on it and some paella. And then...
You had paella on it as well.
I had some paella last night. We had paella yesterday lunchtime, so the leftovers made it to the aid station last night. And then, yeah, I fashioned a penalty tent out of an umbrella and a special needs section. And, yeah, we had some turnaround points and... Yeah, I think my girlfriend thinks I'm going a bit crazy now.
You had a finish line as well.
We had a finish line. That was sort of the last moment, sort of. I realised that I needed some sort of finish line. And yeah, thankfully my girlfriend quickly sort of fashioned one out of some toilet roll.
That's brilliant. And was there wine in the glass at any point, or was that squash or energy drink?
There was some wine to finish with. I basically crossed the finish line and sat down and finished the paella and had some wine, sort of sat in my balcony with my head torched on.
If you look back at this, David, in, I don't know, however many years' time, it's going to be the sort of thing that you remember for the rest of your life.
Easily, yeah. I think, yeah, I will always look back and then, the night, it took a long time last night. I think it was like close to like an hour and 15 minutes of sort of just running back and forward. And it's almost like the glutes hurt more than anything today from like this sort of very tight turning circles. And yeah, it's sort of, yeah, let's hope that we're never in this situation again.
So when Paula sends you another email in a few weeks' time saying, David, do you want to do another race?
Well, the thing is, so... This weekend they're doing it again, but this weekend's just a sprint distance. That would have been perfect for me. Oh. It would have been a lot easier. No, to be honest, like I would do it again in a heartbeat. It's sort of great to sort of have something to sort of do, to be honest. Just something to sort of, yeah, feel that connection with sort of the triathlon community and just to see how everybody's getting on.
If the idea of a virtual Ironman comes up, would that be a little bit too far? Because we did laugh a few weeks ago, didn't we, about the French guy who had done a marathon on his balcony.
You never know. It's definitely possible. We'll see. This has only been 4 weeks, so we'll see what happens in another 2 or 3 weeks. I might just do it for fun one day.
I think you might. I think we've got a marathon on a balcony coming up.
Oh, God. Could you imagine? I need a lot of aid stations.
Yeah, you would need a few more aid stations. Wow. It's amazing, though. I think mental strength is what you'll take a lot from this, David.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's sort of... I'll never, ever complain about having to go out and ride for like 140, 150 kilometres again outdoors. I don't think, to be honest, I'll ever complain or, you know, be anything other than happy for being outside.
Yeah. Even in the rain, even in whatever.
Oh, that would be heaven. I would love to go out and cycle 5 hours in the rain right now, to be honest.
Wow. Did I was going to ask you something about your the course and the thing on the balcony. What was the actual bike leg like for you of your virtual Ironman race?
It was okay. So we did it on Ruby, an Ironman set it all up. So we raced on the Boulder Tri Peaks course or something, one of the famous courses in America. And yeah, it was a cool experience to sort of race it live against Theo, Sam Long and Sam Appleton. And yeah, it was good. My only problem was is that usually I do my turbo training on the balcony, but because of like the camera angles that we needed for the live stream, and also I had my run course set up in the balcony, we had to do it indoors. But yeah, I suppose I never realized just how hot the room was to begin with.
Yeah.
And after about 20, 30 minutes, it was just like being in a sauna, to the point where like I was frantically trying to get my girlfriend to find any other fan we might have had. And there she was, like off screen with like two books, trying to sort of like fan me down with like two sort of notebooks.
And it probably, did it make any difference?
I told her it did, I didn't really, but you know, I had her flapping books at me for 40 minutes, so I have to tell her that it worked well.
Oh, she must be your number one fan, David, I'm telling you. Clearly she's your number one fan, but like from the whole experience and the support of really helping you through this and getting behind you and all that.
It's been sort of, yeah, it's been a nice experience. I think spending 24 hours a day with someone for 4 weeks is sort of, you just sort of end up having like different sort of conversations than you usually do, because yeah, you can't really ask each other how their day's been because you know that in far too much detail already. So yeah, it's sort of, yeah, it's great that after 4 weeks that we're still happy and happy sharing the same space. And yeah, it's sort of a good test of a relationship, I'd say.
Definitely. And do you think you will ever have to finish a run with a head torch on again?
I hope not. We'll see how much pie I eat before the end of this sort of experience, because you never know when the next Ironman race is going to be.
That's very, very, very true. I honestly cannot wait to follow. And any update on swim cords? Is that still?
So the swim cords are still okay. There was like, I had to do an emergency knot in them, but they've so far been sort of okay. I was sort of a bit sick during the week, so I didn't do that much training, to be honest. So hopefully, I don't know how it'll be for the next 4 weeks, but I might try and fashion myself. I managed to find just like a rubber band, so I might be able to sort of fashion my own sort of swim cords this week.
Definitely good luck. And the other thing I was going to ask is, you know that you've been doing more strength training, and yeah. I guess what, now we're 4 weeks down, so this is the fifth week. Can you actually notice a little difference over that month period? Because clearly day on day it's difficult to see, but can you feel any difference in that strength work that you've put in?
I feel like my stability and my core stability has improved a lot, but I don't know whether that's also because maybe I'm less tired from the other training, that it just feels easier. But for sure, I'd say my core stability has improved a lot. And yeah, I feel stronger with the swim cords. But again, yeah, I suppose I won't know until I go back to training properly how much I've improved over the last 4 weeks. But yeah, sort of, especially the stability side of things seems to have improved massively.
That's brilliant. And what about on the bike? Do you feel at all different having done more indoor cycling?
Yeah, I feel a lot stronger. The last sort of week's been quite difficult just because I've had a bit of a cold and stuff, and it's not been fun. But before that, last weekend, I set my highest ever power for 1 hour. I averaged 355 watts for 1 hour. So yeah, I see the biking's moved on just because I've been focusing a lot of time and effort into it. Mm-hmm. I think, again, the biking's moved on. It'll be interesting to see what happens when I finally do get to return to normal training, whether I can sort of maintain the same level of biking.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really interesting that we will all come out of this slightly differently, however that is for each individual.
Yeah, I think there's two things. It'll be interesting to see for me how just cycling for, it might end up being just maybe 8 weeks of just indoor cycling, to see how that sort of impacted on my cycling. But I think also it's about sort of ending this period mentally still being fresh. I think that's what I've learnt maybe over the last week, is that it's very much, I need to sort of leave this sort of period that we're going through still sort of mentally fresh. I don't want to get to the end of this sort of 8 week block and just be completely mentally exhausted.
Mm. And do you feel better mentally this week, do you think, having, even though you've been ill, but having done the race? Because I think compared to last week, and this is just chatting to you, you know, every week for the past month, you sounded really, really down last week and you sound more upbeat today.
Yeah, I think today for sure I feel a lot better. The start of last week, the sort of confinement was starting to get to me. And then sort of during the week, especially Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, where I had just a really bad cold and my body was sore, and that was very difficult, to be honest. That was by far the lowest point I've had during this experience. I was increasingly more and more frustrated. I couldn't really exercise. I just felt trapped. And to be honest, it was like a few days there where I just sort of really, I was sort of getting to the point where I was just hating being here, being in my flat. But yeah, thankfully, the sort of virtual reality challenge came along at the right time. And even though I never felt great yesterday racing on the bike, I felt pretty crap. But to do that experience and to sort of feel that sort of community sort of connection again, and then obviously I just sort of feel a lot more healthier today. I seem to have rebounded massively. And yeah, now I look forward and I feel positive about the next sort of 4 weeks. Whereas sort of, yeah, towards the middle of last week, it was sort of, I was really struggling in my head on getting around the fact that I might be stuck indoors until May the 10th.
Some positive news. I hope, I don't know if David's listening to this, but never mind. But I think I'm a step closer to getting some swim cord sorted for him. You might remember last week that things were not good for him because his treadmill and his swim cords all broke at the same time. And as you could hear in that interview then that we were just talking about, it he did sound a little bit down. So watch this space on the swim cord front. Now, before we hear this week's interview, show sponsors Orion Connect have put extra strict safety measures in place at the moment. They continue to stay open. Their three services are available. So with Orion Connect, most of their partners continue to help customers, and they're offering video or phone consultations. So if you're injured or you are struggling with pain at the moment, and clearly it's a difficult time to get an appointment with a specialist, then get in touch with Orion Connect and they will see what they can do to help. Orion Imaging is accommodating MRI, x-rays and ultrasound as well. And then Orion Develop have been introducing more webinars for health professionals and the general public. So for example, there's one at the end of April on managing back and neck pain during the COVID-19 outbreak. And I'm probably not alone working in strange places at home. Bedrooms, standing by windows to try and stand up, I don't know, kitchen tables, and basically none of them are really designed for working at a computer, are they? So check it out, orion.co.uk, and you'll find all the details there.
Time for this week's interview.
If you've ever done an Ironman in the UK or in Europe or some of the races around the world as well, then there is a good chance that you will be familiar with the voices of this week's guests. But this episode is going to bring those voices to life. I was actually planning to run these interviews a few weeks ago, but then everything happened and it just didn't seem right. And I, I'm a triathlete myself, and I appreciate that the idea of running down a finish chute and crossing the finish line might be really hard to imagine at the moment. But I think now that we're in the UK anyway, 4-5 weeks down into this lockdown period, actually it's quite nice to be reminded of that finisher line buzz. And Paul and Joanne's passion is just what you need to hear, I think, to help you through another turbo session or yet another strength and conditioning workout over Zoom. I really do think that their enthusiasm is going to give you a much needed reminder of why all of your lockdown training genuinely will pay off at some point down the line. In fact, let's just do it now. Let's just hear those words.
At the finish line of an Ironman 70.3, we don't say this. And there's always that debate. But at the finish line of an Ironman, you are an Ironman.
Oh, the memories. So let's start off with South African Paul Kay. He has announced at 79 Ironman races around the world. And I started by asking him how on earth he got into it all. Paul, the world of Ironman racing is a little bit different to your first experience of commentary, which, am I right in saying, was a rubber duck race?
Very, very good. You've done your homework. Indeed. 2nd of December 1990, I just turned 21. I was a weekend jock on a radio station. I used to do the sports reports as well. And I was asked to come to a place called Club Mykonos. It's about an hour, 20 hour, 30 drive up the west coast from Cape Town in the Langebaan Lagoon, where they had the South African National Championships for inflatable powerboat racing, which we fondly refer to as rubber duck racing, which are these little 4.2 meter Hyperlon inflatable rubber boats with 30 horsepower and 50 horsepower engines on the back. And they do surf racing and they do long haul circuit racing. And yeah, that was my introduction to commentary. And it was a baptism of fire, because I don't know how well you know your rugby, but one of the South African Springbok rugby legends by the name of Rob Lowe, in his retirement, he built and raced boats. And he ended up in an accident in the first race in the second heat, where another boat drove over him and he nearly lost his life. And he had to be casevac'd to hospital by helicopter after being stabilized. And they put 11 liters of blood in him. And he survived it and became a huge supporter of blood transfusion locally. But yeah, that was my baptism of fire when it comes to announcing and commentating.
Wow. And then how did you go from that then into commentating at Ironman events?
Giant leap. So I used to do that pretty much every weekend in the summer. I was commentating a boat race somewhere. And then I kind of always been loosely interested in triathlon. I had a mate that did triathlon when I was at varsity at Stellenbosch, and just it seemed like hardcore and cool, and only the handful of people who were the fittest people on the planet did this swim, bike, run thing, and it intrigued me, but I never really went into it. And then in 1994, it was the Cape Town Marathon, and I was roped in as a roving TV presenter for the marathon, doing sort of on-the-spot boxes with runners and with spectators and sort of light, colorful commentary, telling people how terrible the weather was at the time and the rain and the wind. And the producer who was producing that for a big insurance company called Old Mutual, who you probably even know in the UK, he also produced a series for Old Mutual, which was broadcast on South African TV nationally, called The World of Endurance. And the World of Endurance always covered what back in those days was called the 5FM Energade Triathlon Series. It was an international sprint triathlon series raced in Namibia, Zimbabwe, Mauritius, and all across South Africa. And I got roped into being the TV voice for that. And that, again, was a baptism of fire, because what they did was they put me in a little box with headphones that weren't working, and they rolled the tape. And in those days, it was tape. It was Betacam. Rolled the tape, played the pictures, and I had to talk to pictures about something I knew nothing about for 24 minutes, and I would go on TV for the whole nation to hear and watch the next weekend. That was my initiation into triathlon. And I started doing that 10 races a year, every single year for the TV program, until eventually in 2000, the sponsors Energade invited me to Mauritius to the opening race of the season. And it was also coinciding with my 30th birthday. And quite a few of the pros and the elites then said to me, "Oi, you sound like you know what you're talking about, but have you ever done a triathlon?" And I blushed and said no. So I found my Speedo. I got the event cotton t-shirt with an elastic band for my race number. And I borrowed the hotel bicycle, which was a mountain bike, but basically it was a farm gate with wheels, with bent pedals on the cranks, and the wheels were buckled, touching the inside of the brake pads. It was really pleasant. I was last out of the water. I was second last off the bike. I was second last on the run. I did a 31-minute 5K, and I thought I was going to die. That was my introduction to actually doing a triathlon. That was 2000. Got home, sold the mountain bike, bought a road bike, did my first Cape Town Cycle Tour in 2001, did my first half marathon, did my first 70.3, which was the test event for Ironman South Africa in 2004 in March, on zero training, died. I think I came last. And I did my first Ironman in 2008 after having commentated 2001 in Gordon's Bay, and then 6, 7, 8. So I'd commentated 4 Ironmans already when I actually did my first Ironman in beautiful Klagenfurt, Austria.
Wow. And what was, for you, what was that first Ironman like as a competitor compared to commentating on it?
A bit of a blur, really. I often tell people, make sure you always buy the video packs and make sure you buy the photographs. Because to me, that first Ironman was like my wedding, where if there wasn't a video, I wouldn't have remembered much of it. It's just quite overwhelming. And as much as it feels like such a long day, it kind of passes by really, really quickly. And my motivation for doing the Ironman was the big thing. I'd been through a very unpleasant divorce. My ex-wife took my children overseas. I had no access to my kids other than when I traveled to see them. And in those days, you could still come down the finish line with your kids. And I really wanted to do that. That was my motivation. That was my why. And so I had hoped to go under 12 hours. I mean, I was 38 years old, pretty fit. But I got nowhere near 12 hours. It took me 13 hours, 32 minutes and 50-odd seconds. I'm surprised my children were still awake and waiting for me. But my 7-year-old son and 14-year-old daughter were on the Wörthersee just before the magic carpet and ran down the finish line with me. And when I crossed the line, I was extremely disappointed with how badly I did, that I actually took the medal off and I gave it to my son. And only 6 weeks later, when I spent 75 euros to buy the photographs, which is about enough money to buy a house in Cape Town, and I downloaded those photographs, and Facebook was just starting in those days, and I started a Facebook account as a way for my kids to see what I was doing, and they could see what they were doing without having to phone each other all the time. And I made a picture of me on the bike, my profile picture, and my daughter commented and said, "I'm very proud of you, Daddy." And only then did I finally realize what I achieved, and only then was I proud that I had finished an Ironman.
You must see so many different things at a finish line. I guess, what's the weirdest thing you've seen?
Not weird, quite amazing actually, but it really stands out for me. Because, I mean, I've seen some crazy things. I've commentated 79 Ironman now in a short space of time. I'm over 170.3s already. And sometimes, you know, because it's every single weekend, and, you know, when I started, we had 600 to 800 people doing a race. Now we've got 2,500 to 3,000 plus people coming down a finish line, and things can become a bit of a blur when it's weekend in, weekend out. But one of the more incredible things I saw, other than the likes of Kevin and Nikki Garwood, South African version of Team Hoyt coming down the finish line of 70.3 South Africa, and then Ironman South Africa, which was truly spectacular to see. Tariya Pitt was incredible to witness in Hawaii. Shirin Jarami, so many phenomenal moments I've had the pleasure of sharing inside the ropes. But one that really stands out massively for me was the first Ironman in the Netherlands, Ironman Maastricht. Now, marriage proposals are not uncommon. As a matter of fact, marriage proposals happen at every race. Look at Patrick Langer with Julia and Kona just not so long ago. But it's the first time I witnessed a gay marriage. One man proposing to another man, and where else than in the Netherlands? And that was not the weirdest, but it was certainly a standout moment for me. And what I loved about it was that there was no pretense, no embarrassment, no nothing. It just is. It's just people being people. And that was a huge standout moment for me as well.
Have there been moments of real sadness for you as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You don't want to get me started. I'm quite a sensitive, emotional character. A lot of people, when they ask me, how do you keep your energy going for 20 hours? I feed on the energy of the athletes around me and the spectators. So you need to be emotionally open to that. A particular moment was Ironman Nice 2011. After we'd done all the preparations in transition and interviewed some of the pro athletes, in Nice, it's quite unique that you walk down the Promenade des Anglais and you actually walk through the finish line to go to the slipway to access the beach to the swim start, the athletes as well. And I was walking through the finish line and my wife called me aside to tell me that my mother had passed away. So that was particularly hectic. I had a bit of a cry. The race director came up to me to ask me what was wrong. I explained. He told me to go home and I said, no ways. My mother always believed that the show would go on, and the show did go on. But it was brutally difficult because I had to shut off all my emotion and, you know, had to fake it to make it. So one of the toughest Ironmans I've ever commentated was that day. Subsequent to that, you know, we're all one big family. You don't need to know somebody to feel the pain of loss. And when athletes pass away at races, that's also, I find that extremely, tugging on the heartstrings. And then when it's even more emotional when it's people, you know, and I'm actually busy putting together a presentation for the Ironman EMEA Race Directors Conference happening next week. And one of the things they wanted me to talk about was personal anecdotes. And one of those anecdotes is a South African athlete by the name of Chantel Rowell, who had survived cervical cancer, decided to change her life and live every day and be fit. And she'd done one or two Ironman 70.3s, and now she was racing her first full-distance Ironman in Nelson Mandela Bay. And for some reason, I don't know what made me do it on that day, I walked down the carpet to the other end of our finish line, where is the entrance to the transition, T2, and it was 3 minutes or so before bike cutoff. And here she came rolling down over the dismount line, thinking she might not have made it, and realized she had just made the bike cutoff. And she burst into tears, and I shouted her name, and she walked over to me and she said, I can't do this. I'll never make it. And there's an incredible photograph that her then boyfriend took of the two of us conversing, a very special photograph in my career. And I just said to her, you will make it. Do not stop now. You will be an Ironman, and I'll be waiting for you. And I got to call her down the finish line. Excuse me. But a few years later, on the Friday morning of Ironman South Africa, before the welcome banquet, she passed away to cancer for the final time.
And you have that honor of really encouraging people when they're feeling like they can't do it. And you must... Yes, you feed off the emotions when they're amazing, but equally you're there when it's low as well.
Well, when it's low, the lower the low, obviously, you know, that's life, the higher the high. And having suffered through two Ironmans myself, I know that when you think you can't, if you just somehow find a way to not stop, eventually you do. And that's why Ironman is just such an incredible metaphor for life. You just got to keep moving and just keep moving forward. Sometimes there's sideways movement. Sometimes there's speed bumps in the way. You know, every river that makes it to the ocean goes through some rapids and rocks and narrows and widens, and you just got to keep going. And you will get to your finish line. And not everybody makes it within the cutoff, but they still cover every centimeter of every meter of every kilometer. And often it's those that almost just make it and those that almost don't make it who are often the most inspiring. At the inaugural Ironman Kalmar in Sweden in 2012, Uwe Johansson, the mayor of Kalmar, Johan Persson, actually ran the last 2Ks with him to the finish line, and Uwe missed the cutoff. And nobody there really knew what Ironman was. And here I am on a microphone explaining that, you know, this guy's not going to get a medal. He's not going to get a finisher's T-shirt, and his name's not going to be in the results because he's missed the cutoff. And they started booing me. Next thing, they were chanting his name, and he came jogging down the finish line with the mayor, and he crossed, and there were athletes who had finished who queued up to give him their medal that they had just earned at the first ever Ironman Kalmar. And he became a hero and inspiration, and that video has gone viral on YouTube, and he will never, ever do Ironman Kalmar again, he says, because he will never get to eclipse that overwhelming welcome that he got from the spectators who were just blown away that he didn't give up. And he got inundated with Facebook messages about how his guts and his grit inspired them to just start, let alone finish.
That's amazing. Now, you've mentioned Kalmar, you've mentioned Ironman South Africa, you've mentioned Klagenfurt.
Which are my favourite races.
Yes. No, I was going to say, clearly, like, soft spot for those ones. But what is it about those races that you've got a soft spot for that make them a bit different to all of the other races?
Well, I mean, South Africa is an obvious one, being South African born and, you know, South African native. My first ever Ironman I commentated was in South Africa. As a matter of fact, I live in Somerset West, and it's a 10-minute drive from me from where the original Ironman was held in Gordon's Bay, even though now it's in Nelson Mandela Bay in Port Elizabeth. So, and South Africa was, you know, it was where I started triathlon, and South Africa was my springboard to the world, because Ironman South Africa was part of Triangle, and Triangle owned Ironman France, 70.3 Monaco, Ironman Austria. And that's how I got to race Ironman Austria. And Ironman Austria was my first international Ironman I ever commentated. So Austria is a place very close to my heart. It's where my wife and I based ourselves when we started doing the Ironman tours sort of 2010, 2011 onwards. Very, very close to my heart. Kalmar, because it just made such a massive impression in 2012, and it's a wonderful community that embraces Ironman, and they want you there. They're so warm and welcoming. And Tembe is exactly the same. You know, Tembe, if it wasn't for the people of Pembrokeshire, and if it wasn't for all the people in those lovely little villages, and if it wasn't for the way they line Saunders Foot and pretty much every yard of every mile of the run course and even the bike course, regardless of the weather, I don't think Tembe would have survived the last 9 events. It's to me, it's about a community that embraces Ironman and that is excited and passionate and welcoming of the Ironman athletes and their families who come there, because the spectator and the support is one of the key ingredients that makes a good race an amazing race. It's that X factor, and Tembe's right up there, and there are several others, of course.
Yeah. I'm sure if I would say, you know, hands down, if you had to pick one, is there?
I can't. It's you know, that for me, picking a race is like when I get to a race and somebody asks me to make a prediction on who I think will win or what I think the podium will be. There's so many great races and so many great places, and it's not a level playing field, you know, in terms of hosting a race. When it comes to choosing an athlete, the fields are so deep. The athletes are so professional. They're so talented. They all work so hard. How dare I disrespect any of them by trying to choose? And likewise, when it comes to the races, I like different races for different reasons. Some races I really enjoy being there because I love working with the team. pardon me, because I, you know, I'm never home, and you feel more at home in some races than others, because I'm like a memory stick. You know, I'm a plug and play solution. You know, I'm not necessarily a core member of the team. I'm not one of the athletes. I'm not one of the locals. You know, I'm like a gypsy. I arrive, press play, do my thing, turn it off, plug it into the recharge for a couple of days, go to the next spot, press play, go again, you know. But there's some places where you feel more welcome. The other places, it's the team. Other places, it's the locals. Most of the places, it's the amazing athletes. Sometimes it's the destination which blows your mind. Fortunately, I love traveling. And one of the bonuses is for me, I get to go incredible places. And so there's so many ingredients in the recipe that make me go, yeah, this is what I like.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Loads of people would say you have the dream job. Sometimes do you just wish that you could sit on your sofa and not have to travel one weekend?
Not really. I'm extremely blessed, truly, truly blessed to do what I do. I'm very fortunate in that most of my life, I've always done what I loved. At school, I loved photography, and I loved sports. So I played a huge amount of sport, mostly water polo, field hockey, bit of athletics, touch rugby, volleyball, stuff like that. I wasn't very good at it, but definitely got points for enthusiasm. But I love photography, so I was kind of like the school photographer. So when I wasn't on the field, I was on the sidelines taking pictures. And that also how I paid for my pocket money through school and paid for most of my varsity. At varsity, I love music. My father was a semi-professional musician, so I love music. And I ended up on campus radio, and that's how I got into radio, which is how I got into commentating. If you take my love for music and radio and the media, and yet my love for sport and my passion for triathlon, well, you put that in the blender, what comes out?
Paul K.
I'm an Ironman. Boom. Thank you very much. I mean, can you get any luckier than that? You know, so people say I'm lucky. I'm not a huge fan of the word luck. Fortunate for sure. Blessed without a doubt. Very hardworking. Yes. Never rest on my laurels. I try to never be complacent. I try to always leave the ego at home. The travel is a bonus. Part of the travel that's not so great is, you know, budget airlines and delayed flights and the airport security who can't be uniform all around the world and everybody does it differently. But other than that, I love it.
And how do races differ now that some of them are age group only? Have you found that the atmosphere is different?
Not really. It's just quite a few of the athletes, they really love towing the line with the pros and rubbing shoulders and get to chat to them. And that adds a certain spice to the event and a certain gravitas in a way. But on the other hand, at age group only at races, the age grouper is the pro. The age grouper, all the focus is on the age grouper. And age grouper gets to be the first to break the tape, the first down the finish line, the first on stage, you know. So I don't think it really changes the atmosphere. I think once the gun goes, it's all about what Ironman really is. It's this incredible test of character, this test of will, this test of mind over body and mind over matter. And these days, with Mother Nature becoming more and more of a participant in these events, it's a test of overcoming, you know, lots of curveballs that are completely unplanned. And it's overcoming those challenges and coming down that finish line and that sense of achievement that does not change, be it a pro or an age grouper.
You mentioned the finish line. I'm going to finish with this question. If anyone is doing their first triathlon this year, whether it's a sprint, whether it's Olympic, whether it's a middle distance, or whether they are doing their first Ironman, what is the best way that they should cross that finish line?
My first tip always is do not fiddle trying to stop your watch under the gantry, because you get a really bad finisher photo. Make sure you get the best finisher photo ever. Zip up, do handstands, do push-ups, do whatever it takes to get in a phenomenal finish line photo. Ideally, smile. That's step number one. Step number two on a busy finish line, if you're not really going for that PB, that personal best, wait for a gap where the finish line is yours and you can own the carpet. High five the announcers, acknowledge the spectators. But those 50 meters or whatever they are, pretend it's the best dance floor on the planet and just have a party.
Ugh, doesn't half whet the appetite, does it? And overcoming all of this stuff, getting through this time and the stresses is going to make that finish line all that bit sweeter when we are finally able to race again. So I mentioned Joanne Murphy as well. She is an Ironman announcer here in Europe, mainly in the UK and Ireland. And we'll find out more about her and her background in a little bit. But before then, I thought I'd take a step back and let Joanne and Paul interview each other. And when we recorded this, Paul was busy training for only his second ever Ironman 70.3. So Joanne asked him how his training was going.
I'm loving it. You know what? You remember I destroyed my knee on the finish line of Ironman Austria in 2016, and it's been a long road. Having toured the rest of that year with a torn ACL and then taking long to get it fixed, and then another iron tour with a repaired ACL but without doing the rehab. And then, you know, last year, slowly but surely putting little pieces together to get fit again. And then I did a 3-day bicycle stage race middle of November, and then I did a popular race locally called the Double Century, which is 202 Ks, but I only did 160 of it. But it was just like realizing that, oh, you know, you can get fit again. The only thing that is required is patience, something I'm not really good at, but I'm learning it. And it's great to be fit. And I'm sure you would agree, being on the tour and doing what we do, being fit and being healthy is a massive contributor towards doing our jobs well.
Oh, absolutely. I suppose when you think about like a full Ironman race day is 17 hours for the athletes, but for the team announcing and event team and volunteers, it's a much longer day. And then you turn around after very little sleep on the night before the race, you work the race day, very little sleep that following night, and then you're up really early again to deliver the awards. So I call the Tuesday after an Ironman weekend my hangover day.
Yeah, it does. And look, hey, talking about getting fit, I remember a run you and I had near what was then the Reebok Stadium, because you were just a few weeks away from 226 kilometers of swim bike run in Bavaria yourself. And I remember barely being able to keep up with you on that run.
I'd say you'd be well able to keep up with me now. That's for sure. I'm concentrating on my biking again in 2020 for the moment, trying to just
get back. So how is Freddie?
Freddie is fine. He is still in the kitchen along with Teddy, my time trial bike. Teddy and Freddie, my two best friends. But I am trying to get fit again, bike fit, and hopefully do a triathlon later on this season. And it's amazing as well. You know, when you're standing up giving the briefings, you know yourself, you're being looked at by, you know, 500-600 people in a room who are all the fittest and healthiest they've probably ever been getting ready to race. You want to feel, you know, like as an example, you know, and
that's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the athletes, most of them, are a lot of them that may not have met either you or I before, don't know that we're endurance athletes. But it's nice to be able to stand up there and feel like what you're telling them, we know from experience, not just from reading it in a book or hearing somebody else say it.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure you agree that your personal race experiences help tremendously for you to be able to interpret the emotions that you feel from the athletes racing around you, the interpret the body language you're seeing such that you can color your commentary to bring it to life to the spectators who might not necessarily get it.
Yeah, and I think it's also, we play a vital role in keeping the athletes calm. I'm sure you've heard that quite a lot, whereby people are so nervous on the swim, they're almost contemplating pulling out, and then they'll hear your voice or my voice or one of the other announcers that we work with across the world, and they'll just feel at ease and know that they're safe because we have created an atmosphere with music and our voices, and we get the spectators behind them. So not only do they believe in themselves, but they believe that this event is going to, you know, make them, and they are going to make it to that finish line.
And for a lot of the athletes, they want to do more than just make it to the finish line. They're hoping to say yes on the morning after the race at the Kona slot allocation. Why don't you just talk us through your experiences in Kona?
Yeah, so I was in Kona twice. I had the pleasure of being over there before I ever started looking at the media side of things. Met lots of the professional athletes, did some interviews with them. Amazing, amazing experience. And then in 2016, I went back over and very graciously accepted an opportunity to be part of the announcing team as a spotter. To stand in the finish line, the finish tower with yourself and Mike Riley and Andy, and spot the athletes coming down the finish line and give you a dig in the ribs to say, stop talking, call the athlete home. You know, people that wanted to be called home by you or by Mike. And also obviously getting that opportunity to work the hot corner in Kona was an incredible experience. But Kona is like nothing else on earth, and I've only barely experienced it. But Paul, I think you should tell the listeners what it's really like in Kona from your perspective.
I often get asked that, and it's just not something you can explain to somebody. It's something people have to experience for themselves. It's a very, very special place. I always tell people that the minute that the door of the airplane opened and it went from that chilly, chilly air-conditioned air, this hot, humid night air comes flooding into the tube of the aircraft, into the inside of the fuselage, and you feel it immediately. And you would agree that it's a huge privilege, it's an honor, and it's incredibly special to be shoulder to shoulder with the best of the best on the planet, be they age group or pro, be they sporting brands, or whatever the case may be. The best of the best are all there, and it's a small community, and it might be 32 degrees Celsius with 100% humidity, but I spend a lot of time with goosebumps when I'm in Kona. I always tell people, you know, not just athletes, but often athletes who are on the cusp and not sure they'll ever qualify, should they or shouldn't they go. And I tell people that Kona in race week is worth going for, whether you're racing or not. As a matter of fact, I can't think of anything more rewarding than going there and putting your hand up to be a volunteer and being on the inside of the ropes of one of the most special events on the planet. It really, really is special. But I'm going to digress now slightly because I'm on a bit of a time limit. And Joe, I want to ask you, what gets you out of bed at those stupid o'clock hours in the darkness of the morning? And for you, more so than me, usually with not the world's best weather, to get up there and, you know, encourage those athletes every swim stroke, every turn of the pedals, and every step of the run.
I just absolutely love it. I can't describe the feeling of knowing that you or I or whoever we're working with is helping to create this magical atmosphere for the athletes, for the spectators, for the town that we are involved with, for the volunteers that are there, for all the stakeholders. It's such a privilege to be part of a team that delivers people's dreams. And sometimes exactly. People forget that people put so much into an Ironman race or an Ironman 70.3 or whatever it is, that for them, running down a finish line and receiving a hug or a high five or whatever it is that they get is for them the epitome of their sporting career, potentially, for a lot of people who are, you know, maybe doing their first race or maybe never will do another Ironman again. They might go back down to a lower level, but it's a huge privilege. I don't think people realize how emotional we get on the finish line.
That's true.
I've cried at the award ceremony. I've cried on the finish line. I've had so many sweaty hugs and snotty high fives, which probably isn't a nice part of our job.
I nearly couldn't brush my teeth at the end of one race. I got high fived so hard. I had to brush my teeth with my left hand.
Yeah, it's the emotion. It's an emotionally charged day for everybody. Every single person, whether they're a volunteer, whether they're a race director, whether they're one of the course team leaders or a spectator, and never mind the athletes. It is just emotionally charged. And we get to create that. We get to create that atmosphere because we're the point of contact that the athletes have as they finish, as they start their race and as they finish their race. And that's very special. And everyone, it doesn't matter whether they're at the pointy end of the business or they're coming in, you know, very last, which is also a very special place to be if you've ever raced in Ireland and the UK or across any races where the Ironman brand is there. That final finisher gets a serious hero's welcome.
Well, I never forget Marina van Hunneke, who's multiple Ironman champion on almost every continent. He was special moment for me when I was on the finish line when he set the world record of 7:45:58 in 2011 in Austria. And I remember he came down to the, in the early days, he was always too serious. He'd never come back at the end. And towards the end of his career now, he's come back to the finish line in that last hour, what we often refer to as hero's hour. And he was flabbergasted. He was standing next to me and he's going, what is this? These athletes coming last in the final hour are getting more love than I got when I won it. And there are very few sports on the planet, if any, where the winner, the professional winner, gets the identical medal to the athlete who finished last.
Yeah, it's very, very special. What would you say have been some of the highlights of your career, Paul? Because you've been doing this for a lot longer than I have.
You know what? That's a moving goalpost. It's something I think about a lot. You know, having read Mike Riley's book, Finding My Voice, and you know, all the other triathlon books and sporting books I read, and I think to myself, and I go back and I try and remember. And it's a moving goalpost because every year there are new highlights. And for me, you were talking about the athletes, and for all of those athletes, their moment on the finish line is one of the most important moments in their lives right then and there. And for me, every finisher is a highlight in a way. You know, it really, really is. But there are other things that stand out, you know, when you get to see incredible performances like Jan Frodeno, Ali Brownlee, Javier Gomez at the 70.3 World Championship in Nelson Mandela Bay. I mean, that was 70.3 World Championship to end all 70.3 World Championships. You get to watch the likes of Anna Haug, what she did in Kona last year. You get to see what Chrissy Wellington did. I have the pleasure of having been part of quite a few of those races. And to see these performances, then to see Team KPZ and to see the Hoyts come back and racing. And then I mentioned Turia Pitt earlier on with Ashton Helen. I mean, there are so many of these moments. I feel it's rude and disrespectful to everybody else to try and single out a handful of moments. You know what I mean?
So, Paul, if you could race any race in the world, not Nantes, race, what would it be?
Wow. I must admit, I'd probably love to race Ironman South Africa, but I've been told I'm not allowed to. So I'll have to really do extremely badly at my job and get fired. Otherwise, I'd be far too old to do the race.
Or we can do a swap. You can come and announce in Ireland and I'll announce in South Africa.
I don't have wellies. I don't have rainproof gear. You guys, you've got that. You've got that sorted.
So are you able to pronounce where the race is on?
Yo.
Oh, good job.
Do you think I sleep at night?
No, just like me, you don't sleep at night either.
Exactly. Always doing our homework. You know, people often ask me, and I'm sure they ask you as well, you know, how do you prepare to commentate and announce at races? And that preparation is continuous. It never stops. You know, you're consuming social media, you're consuming triathlon media, you're consuming general sporting media. It never, ever stops. You're conversing with athletes face-to-face, by email, by messenger, whatever the case may be. And so, yeah, I was paying attention last year at the first Ironman in Ireland.
Lovely stuff. Well, I look forward to seeing you in Wales, along with Jay, and having lots of fun for the 10th anniversary, because contrary to public opinion, yes, Ironman Ireland should be my favourite race, but I absolutely love Tenby. I love Wales. It was my first ever full distance announcing job, and it just holds a very special place in my heart.
So listen, do you know what South Africa's favourite pastime is?
No.
We like to braai. Do you know what a braai is?
Oh, a barbecue.
No, no, no. A barbecue is a whole bunch of men standing in line to have their hair cut. Okay? We braai. I have got wood on the fire. I lit the fire before coming onto this podcast and using beautiful hard Namibian hardwood, which creates excellent coals. I've got a spatchcock chicken. Got some potatoes roasting in the oven at the moment. It's 26 degrees Celsius outside with a gentle breeze. There is a cold beverage in my fridge that is shouting my name. I don't know if you can hear it. If you listen carefully. Oh.
I'll just jump in my private helicopter and fly to South Africa for dinner. I'll see you in about 24 hours.
Listen, you've been threatening to come visit me in South Africa for a very long time. I don't believe you anymore.
I'm waiting for the official invitation to race Ironman 70.3 South Africa.
You know, you're full of nonsense. You've been invited many times. Stop this.
Oh, the banter. And I honestly, there was plenty more giggling when I spoke to Joanne on her own. In fact, the first attempt, sorry, three attempts at starting the interview were such a total disaster that I just had to get rid of it. It made the outtakes. So if you're a patron of the show, you have got access to that clip over at patreon.com/InsideTryShow. Anyway, so how did Joanne get into it all?
Ooh, there's a loaded question. So back in 2011, when Ironman 70.3 came to Ireland for the very first time to Galway, I was the beginners officer for Galway Tri Club. And I happened to announce the aquathon that the club were hosting because I knew everybody. And if I didn't know the people, I'd make up a story about them. Funny story. And the guys that were bringing Ironman to Ireland at the time asked me, would I announce the Irish race? But I had been training since the previous January to take part in the event. And I was like, no. I'm going to do the race. What happened was I didn't know, but I actually had a fracture in my pelvis that was diagnosed about 2 weeks later. So I went cap in hand back to the guys here in Galway and said, oh, do you remember that job you were offering me? Is it okay if I do it? I can't race. And the rest is history. So 2011, announced my very first sporting event with the Tri Club, and a couple of weeks later announced at Ironman 70.3 Galway, and haven't stopped working or talking since.
And you haven't always worked in public speaking or anything, clearly, if that was your first time. So what were you doing before then?
So I worked in marketing. My degree is in commerce with a major in politics. Hard to believe that. Well, maybe not. Politics, marketing and business finance. And I worked in marketing then for a couple of years before I took up a role in fundraising. And I worked in Enable Ireland for many years and then moved on to the Irish Cancer Society, which would be similar to Macmillan in the UK. So I worked there for a couple of years, was in fundraising in total for 11 years. And I was presenting from 2011 to 2015, as well as working as the community fundraising manager for the charity. And it just kind of took its toll. I was at a crossroads kind of in the middle of 2015. I went to Kona and really saw what it was like to be on the sports side of things and presenting and doing the media stuff. And I just absolutely loved it. I turned off my work phone for the first time in 11 years in Kona in 2015. And I came home and made the difficult decision to decide to give up a really good job that I loved it, but I loved presenting more and I loved sport more. And it was the right time to make a move into seeing whether I could make a career out of presenting and working across a number of different sporting events. And I was very lucky that there's a local company here in Galway called Run Ireland who offered me a part-time role with them while I kind of built up my own brand. And I still work with them now, very few hours with them, but they're still one of my big clients and customers and friends. And it just all developed from there, really. I handed in my notice at work in the end of, I think, November, so a month and a half after I came home from Kona. And then I went out on my own in that January 2016. And to be honest, I've never looked back and I really haven't stopped talking.
Quite a few people have been in touch with me over the last year and a half, because, you know, I quit my job as well, and they'd say, I really, you know, I want to do this or I want to do that. What advice would you give for people who perhaps are at that crossroads or are considering a career change or, you know, jacking in their full-time job to go and do something else that they've become really passionate about? What's the best piece of advice that you could give them?
God, it's funny. I actually gave a talk yesterday to a college in Cork for their Enterprise Day. And there was five pillars that I said were important for starting up your own business or for being successful in business, but actually successful in life in general. And it was basically across, you know, your community. Having your community around you and building a tribe or building a community of people that you can trust and support and be trusted and supported by, if you know what I mean, and building that tribe around you. There was also communication with your customers and your clients and, you know, the communication between you and the people that you want to work with or work for. There was bits around collaboration and connections and the comfort zone. And I think comfort zone is a big part of it, pushing outside your comfort zone when you're in business or when you're looking to take a risk, to give up a job, to pursue something that's a passion. You really are pushing outside your comfort zone every day. And the days you aren't pushing outside your comfort zone, you need to question why you're not pushing outside your comfort zone. But I think they would be relative for life as well as for somebody who might be looking at an opportunity to change jobs. I think it's a calculated risk to do it. I certainly had myself set up that if I failed as a presenter or if the work dried up or Iron Man decided that they didn't want to renew my contract, I would have the role with Run Ireland and I would have other clients that I would work with or different events that I would work with. But I always had kind of, I suppose the biggest fear is money coming in, that you won't be able to pay the bills. So I had that kind of security coming in straight away before I took the plunge. But I think the calculated risk and the support around you and mentors are hugely important. Hugely important. I wouldn't be where I am today without the connections that I've made along the way, whether it was through the success of my fundraising career or where I am now as a presenter. The connections are the most valuable thing that you can have, aside from my voice, obviously. But the people, honestly, the people that I've met have made my career. You know, you don't know where a conversation with somebody will go or what it will lead to. And I think that's very important. And having a bit of a plan. I mean, I don't have a 5-year plan. I don't have a 10-year plan. I really should. I'm kind of winging it at the moment, trying to just balance everything that's going on. I know myself where I want to be and what I want to do. So I have a vision for where I'll be, but I certainly don't have it written down in terms of a strategic plan for me or for the business. You know, but it's a goal and it's scary and it's brilliant. I absolutely love it.
A bit like doing an Ironman when you hit that enter button and you think, I don't know if I can do that. And then somehow, bit by bit, you do it. So, Jo, on to Ironman. Talk us through a day when you are doing not even the day, because it isn't a day, is it? It is more than a day. So let's say Ironman Wales, what does the period around that look like?
I suppose I would travel so before the race ever kind of kicks in, we're linking in with the race directors well in advance and with the teams on the ground. Normally we would get the briefing for the athletes prepared before we even land on site. I would travel on a Wednesday maybe to Dublin and then travel early on a Thursday morning to make it to Wales. I would link in with the race director and the various team leaders that feed into that briefing to approve it. We would already
so do you
have
write
scheduled-
it or does someone else write it?
Generally the race director will write it and then I'll go through it and make sure that what we've said last year is similar to what we've done this year. If there's new improvements to races, I'll make sure that I understand where they are. I don't always get to go out on the course, but I do get a full debrief on the run and the bike course so that if I'm asked questions, I'm able to answer them. Now, obviously, I can't answer everything, and that's why we would always have senior members of the team at the race briefing, like the race referee or the race director or the managing director or the particular course directors would be there, and they're able to answer the questions. But we would have the production schedule done for the awards, even gathering all the videos, the AV for briefings, awards, any dignitaries that we're meeting, we'd have discussed all of that as well. The protocols around the finish line of who's doing what and what, you know, there's so much stuff. It's not just the race day. You think about it, you're hosting a briefing four or five times every day or over the couple of days, and all the AV that goes with that, the music, never mind race day itself, and then the full schedule for the awards. So my days really are taken up in Wales with race briefings and meetings with different people. And then Jay would look after Iron Kids on the Saturday while I'm doing briefings. We hosted a fabulous Women for Tri activity last year with Simone Mitchell and Laura Siddle, yourself and Lindsay Patterson, which was fantastic to have them on board. Simone was the eventual winner, and Laura Siddle just coming back from injury. Fantastic to host that event on the, I think it was the Friday night we did that.
Yep.
And then race day itself, you know, there's lots of preparation. So when you look at the video of Ironman Wales, I always get goosebumps at the start line. But what really I loved about it last year was we had done so much minute detail on the pyrotechnics with the music, with everything that happened that day. So I don't know if you've seen that video recently, but on the 27th into the 28th second of Thunderstruck, the pyrotechnics went off, and that they would just continue along to the beat of the music that we were doing. Everything is timed to within an inch of its life. From the minute I arrive on site at 5 or 5:30 in the morning, we go live generally at 6 on race day morning, and then everything is there's particular announcements that need to be made to get the athletes to where they need to be, to help them feel you know, ready for the race, to encourage them, a very calm voice, and the music that we play. I mean, I pick all the music that we play at the different times of the day, but especially in the morning, because you want to create that very special atmosphere that gets the athletes fired up but also gets the spectators ready for an epic morning of a swim.
So you have to pick all that music, and the finish line music as well.
Yeah, so generally we'll have a playlist. We'd normally, depending on the race, there might be individual Ironman Facebook pages or groups that we would be part of, and I would post up, you know, any suggestions for your race day playlist and try and incorporate the race day songs into the playlist that people request, because people train at different races and music has such a powerful medium. I mean, I remember it was Avicii, Wake Me Up When It's All Over, when I did my first Ironman distance race, and every time I hear that song I get a smile on my face.
Yeah,
you know, that's 2013, you know. So it just, you know, music has the power to make you happy, make you sad, make you emotional, and that people remember songs that they had when they go into the water, when they cross the finish line. And yeah, we'll have a mix of music then, depending on who the announcers are. And Jay might prefer to work with his music because he knows how to work with his music. I might work with my music. And then for the last hour, we'll mix it up because we'll both be on the finish line together. Paul will be very similar. He'll have his own music when he's announcing, because we work well with that. We can work with the beat. We can work with the crowd. And that's very important as well, that when you're announcing, and I'm sure Paul probably mentioned this, that it's not just about the athletes, it's actually about the spectators as well, because if we can get the spectators to give so much energy to the athletes have an incredible experience even before they get the finish line. So that's really important. And as the day goes out, then there's just, I suppose, so many different aspects to it. We could be here all day describing how you deliver it from an announcer perspective. But there's a lot of prep work goes in behind the scenes. You know, for the professional athletes, with the Ireland and the UK, you'd have a lot of the same athletes racing in the circuit, but you'd also have a huge amount of athletes that might be new and upcoming, will race their first race in Ireland or in the UK, or we mightn't have seen those athletes from Europe who might be on Paul's circuit but not on our circuit. So we research the professional athletes, we find out as much as we can about them, so on race day we can inform the audience, or I suppose the spectators, about them while they're waiting for them to come down the finish line, and create a story about them. You know, so we get the, so even though the athletes are on the finish line and they can't see the athletes coming out on the run course. We're telling the story of what happened during the day, whether it was a significant pass on a bike, a significant crash, a puncture somebody got that they repaired, you know, whether they've, you know, come back from injury, whether they're a multiple champion, whether it's their first race and they're about to win it. You know, you just create that story for the spectators, but it takes a lot of preparation work beforehand. And myself and Jay, particularly in the UK, would work closely together to make sure that we've captured as much as we can on the athletes and that we can talk about them properly and how they should be spoken about with their accolades and their achievements on that finish line and throughout the course of the day. That was a really long-winded answer to your short question.
It's all right. Detail's good. What time do you get to bed then on race day?
So normally it depends on what time the race starts at in the morning. So I suppose really on the Saturday night before the race, you might get 3 hours sleep because it depends on where you're staying. It depends on what last minute things need to be done. So you might have 3 hours sleep. You're on site at 5 o'clock or half five. Race is 17 hours. So if it starts at six, you might be finished on the finish line. Or sorry, if it starts at seven, you'd be finished on the finish line around 12 o'clock, I think. My maths isn't any good. So you're talking about maybe 2 hours after or 3 hours after the last athlete crosses the finish line, because no more than the athletes coming down the finish line, their adrenaline, their cortisol is pumping. When you've worked the finish line and you are on an emotional high, it is really hard to come down from it. Really hard. It's really hard to get your heart to come back, to not be racing, come back to your head, not running through everything that's happened during the day, and to just kind of step back out of it. So generally we'll try and go have a cup of tea or maybe an Irish whiskey or a pint of Guinness and just chill out and just chat about the day and about how well it went, hopefully. And, you know, some of the stories that I might have missed on the finish line if I wasn't there. I think at one stage, I think Jay got six engagements at one race last year. I missed all of them, but I had three of my own on one race. I think it was nine proposals on the finish line in total. It was a bit crazy. But we just talk about the day and try and just come down from it. But for a full distance race, you really do need to try and get sleep because your voice is in ribbons no matter how much you've tried to hold back or how much you've tried to protect your voice. You still have to go and hold the awards the next day and be coherent to put that final schedule together and make the athletes enjoy the experience of accepting their slot to Kona or winning their age group or whatever it is that we're celebrating at the time during the awards. And then, you know, you kind of really do, I suppose, finally get that slump at about 5 o'clock on the Monday. It's usually a travel day. So by Tuesday, I am absolutely broken.
Joe, tell me about Teddy and Freddie.
Well, you see, I always believe that if you're going to buy something that you're going to sit on for a long time and spend lots and lots of time with, you've got to love what it is. And I absolutely love Freddie. Now, Freddie wasn't the cheapest bike in the shop. And he wasn't...
Right, hold on. Teddy and Freddie are your bikes?
Yes. Freddie was my first born bicycle. Well, actually second, because I had Jerry the Giant and I still have him. He was my very first bike I bought in 2009, I think it was. And in 2011, I think I bought Freddie and I still have him. And he's an AR5 felt with road bar, TT bars on him. And I love him. And I love how he looks. I love how he feels. I love riding him. That sounds really sexual, but it's not. And I'll tell you a funny story. I fell off my bike in Westport a few years ago and fractured my pelvis. And separate to the fracture I had in 2011. But when I went into A&E the next day, the guy said to me, "What happened to you?" And I said, "Oh, I fell off Freddie." He's like, "You did what?" I'm like, "Well, it's my bike. But I had the whole A&E in stitches laughing at me because I'd fallen off my bike. I might have fallen off my bike that I had called Freddie. But so Freddie has been by my side for the two Irish records. And then I bought Teddy, who's also a felt bicycle, but he's a TT bike. And I love him too. And he's red and black. And I felt it was important to name my bikes because they're part of me. They're like my phone. They're like my right arm. When I'm riding both of them, I feel at one with my bike and I love them. Oh, that sounds really sad, doesn't it?
No.
But I always say to people, you've got, like, people name their cars. So why can't you name your bike? And if you're going to spend so much time on your bike, you may as well talk to it when you've nobody else to talk to.
So, Joe, tell me about the Galway girls.
Oh, the Galway Babes, actually. The Galway Girls, the Galway Babes. So the Galway Babes, we back in 2016, myself and a fellow triathlete in Galway, Karen Cassidy, we were watching intently two Irish ladies, Lisa and, oh my God, can I remember her second name? I can't, it escapes me. But they were the first two Irish pair, females, to do the race around Ireland, which is 2,250 kilometres of non-stop racing around some of the hardest and hilliest roads in the country. And myself and Karen watched with great intent of the race unfold. And having breakfast down in Salt Hill one morning, she said, she's like, love to do that. And I was like, are you off your head? She goes, no, could you imagine if we did it? I'm like, oh yeah, I really could do with a goal. I was the first year into the business, really, of working on my own. I was like, okay, I could manage that. Let's see. So we kind of just took a look at a couple of different girls and approached a few people and wanted to have some really... just prove that, like, you put four kind of female athletes together and you train them up and you encourage them, you support them, you give them every opportunity to prove a massive point. And that's what we did. We gathered not necessarily the strongest cyclists. I certainly wouldn't have been the strongest. Karen and Marie by far would be our top cyclists. Myself and Breed are strong, but certainly wouldn't be as strong as the other two. And we were just four normal girls that wanted to do this race. And it was more about mental strength and about bonding as a team. And no matter whether the weather was good, bad or indifferent, that we would want to train, that this was going to be the priority for 2017, to go and be the first female team from the west of Ireland to race around Ireland. The record at the time, I think, was 96 hours, and we brought a really good team around us, a coach, physio, a team of support network with us, nutritionist, everything. And they worked with us for, I suppose, until the race itself, where we went and we were beaten to the post by an incredible team of Australian females. J.A., who's from Northern Ireland. I think it's Northern Ireland. She's Irish. She lives in Australia. And we were beaten for the title by the Velaroos, who took... Damn. They were unreal, but they finished in like 72 hours or something. I mean, they took 20 hours off the record and they still beat us by 10 hours. They were fourth overall. They were amazing and they still are. And if you want to be inspired by some female cyclists that are age group athletes, but really at the top of their game as well, the Velaroos in Australia, they were part of the Internationals team last year as well. Just amazing girls. But we didn't mind losing to them because they were so incredible. If it had come down to the wire, I'd be devastated. But, you know, we got our Irish record. That's what we set out to do. And it was an amazing experience. It was so hard and so horrible, but yet it was the best experience of my life, I would say, in terms of sport. And then because we'd lost the race, I suppose, we hadn't won, we kind of wanted to prove to people that we weren't one trick ponies and that, you know, we really were a strong team. And we still are a strong team. We just haven't raced since 2018. But the Donegal Ultra 555 kilometre race, it would have been at the time another really, really tough race to do. Donegal is the hilliest county in Ireland, and we won that race, and people told us we wouldn't win it, nor would we break the record, which had been set by an incredible team of athletes the year before. But we finished that race in 19 hours and I think it was 25 minutes, taking 20 minutes off the previous record, which for us was incredible and a testament to the commitment we had put in, but also a testament to the team we had around us, our coach, our crew, the guys that were working with us even on the actual race itself throughout the weekend. You know, we were the priority. Every decision that was made over the course of the time in both races, the first question you asked was, is this in the interest of the riders? And that's, we were treated like amazingly by the team, and we wouldn't be there without the support of them and the support of our families. But I suppose the Galway Babes started off as four women who were kind of friendly and kind of knew each other and became friends, and now it's family. 100% it's family. Very, very close still to all the riders, and the families go on holidays together and everything as well as gas. We go away for little trips together, and you know, it's profound how sport can bring people together and just make life so different, you know. People don't probably see that a lot when they see me bouncing around a finish line, but you know, triathlon, the decision to do triathlon in 2009 changed my life massively, personally and professionally.
And because of that as well, Jo, because you know how much it's changed your life, is that partly why you are so passionate about the work that you do for women for tri and trying to encourage more women into the sport? Doesn't necessarily have to be Ironman, but, you know, into triathlon.
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose I've always had kind of a sense of community and a sense of belonging and belonging to something that's bigger than yourself. And being part of the Tri Club was a pivotal point, both professionally and personally. I moved to Galway in 2004 after the sudden death of my father, traumatized. I have a sister who absolutely was traumatized over it, and a mum who, you know, we all were devastated and our lives were broken. And whilst I enjoyed the work I was doing and the people I was meeting, setting out and starting triathlon was very different. I've always been very sporty, playing team sports, but doing triathlon was different. It was headspace. It was out for time for me on my own. I didn't worry about anyone or anything. I just worried about myself, which sounds very selfish at the time. But when I look back, I think I needed it. And then kind of, you know, started doing triathlon, and this whole community of amazing people, just kind of, we were all the same. We were all mad doing triathlon, and we were all competitive, and we were all having fun and enjoying the social aspect of it. But I built a network. It's hard to believe, when I moved to Galway in 2004, the only people I knew were my immediate family, my mum and sister, and some cousins, a very small number of family and cousins that we have here. And now, you know, I walk down the street and or I meet people and there's people I know everywhere. And it's brilliant. It's but the Tri Club helped to bring that out in me. I got involved from the very get go. I did a year as a triathlete with them, and then the beginner's officer role came up and I jumped in with 2 feet. I ended up beginner's officer, PRO and chair of the club. I gave back to my community, and then obviously Tri Talking Sports started taking off. So I pulled back a little bit because, you know, there could have been conflicts with some of the stuff I was doing versus what the Tri Club were doing. But even now, I'm a big advocate for supporting people and empowering them. I'm a mentor, actually, funny enough, to Laura Siddle, who wants to get into race commentary and announcing, and she's already doing a lot of it, but she wants to be mentored into that area. So as part of Triathlon Business International, we're on a mentoring program together. You know, that's fantastic, and I love that. I'm president of a business and women's professional club here in Galway, you know, encouraging more females to set up in business, to be empowered, to follow their ambition, follow their passion. You know, so it's kind of it's a bit of a mixed bag, but I suppose I've gained so much from what other people have given me that I feel it's only right that I give back. And I enjoy it. I announced, you know, today on my social pages that I was one of 4 global Women for Tri ambassadors, and empowering and encouraging women is a big part of what I feel my identity is as a female voice in sport. It's very important to me. So I mightn't be the greatest athlete ever, but I believe that through what I'm doing, so the race around Ireland, the triathlon, the bits and pieces, like, I'm just a normal person. I'm an average Joe, you know, or some people say I'm not average, but I'm just a normal person who's going about life, having an adventure. And if I can help make somebody else's day better, then that makes me feel good. So that's another long-winded answer to your very short question.
Joe, I was going to say, honestly, I think when you and I had a chat, I said, everyone needs to speak to Joe on a Friday. It cheers them up. And I stand by that. Everyone needs to speak to Joanne Murphy on a Friday.
My phone will be hopping. I just listen to the podcast, they'll be fine.
Whether you're listening to this on a Friday or not, hopefully her enthusiasm and passion and everything else that she's been talking about has popped a smile on your face. And if you are going to be doing an Ironman race next year in the UK, then at least now you know a little bit more about the person whose voice you will hear on the day.
Thanks for listening to the Inside Tri Show. If you want to get in touch or get a little bit more information on anything, then reach out to Helen on Instagram or Twitter at Inside Tri Show.
So many people got in touch on social media following last week's episode with the amazing Claire Danson. I have shared some of the messages with Claire, and it's just so touching and warming to know that it has made such a huge impact on you. So Jill and Sid and Bethan and Julie on Instagram, and Linda Cook and Vicky McKinnon and Miranda Palmer, Sarah Winnie, Rachel Cullen, all on Twitter. And to the friends as well who messaged me privately on Facebook or WhatsApp, you know who you are. Thank you so much, and do keep them coming. So this week's show is powered by 33fuel.com. I had actually one of their yummy energy bars when, embarrassingly enough, I hadn't quite got my nutrition sorted on a walk. Oh my God, I'm so bad. Over the Easter holidays. And hunger struck big time. And we had gone from the doorstep, and I got rather peckish, but I had put one in my bag and I shared it with Rich. So both massive fans of their energy bars, absolutely delicious, full of natural stuff, really good. Use the code INSIDETRY33 for a discount at checkout at 33fuel.com. If you are struggling to maybe get hold of your favourite gels, or you can't get to the shops at the moment and you're hankering after your favourite nutrition, sports nutrition things, then have you looked at ComFuel? It's like a pick and mix of sports nutrition, and they deliver it through your letterbox. Listeners to the Inside Try Show can get 20% off all orders using the code INSIDETRY over at comfuel.co.uk. So I mentioned before, I'm going to be doing this virtual race this weekend. Who knows how it's going to be? The finish line is not going to be anything like Paul Kay or Joanne Murphy announcing Rich and I over it. Might take inspiration from David McNamee and maybe get a toilet bowl finish line. Might do that. The yoga is still very much happening. Absolutely loving 6:45 Yoga Club. If you want to take part, we're doing it Monday to Friday, 6:45 a.m. Some listeners are joining in. Some age groupers are joining in, and it's just such a great way to start the day if you cannot swim. So if you do want to do that, it's not a talk class. We're following yoga with Adrian. It's just brilliant. Really good bunch of people. Just get in touch with me and I can send you the Zoom details. So you have been listening to the Inside Try Show with me, Helen Murray. My aim is pretty simple. Each week, I want to help keep you entertained and inspired while you're training. Sports Tours International and Orion Connect helped make that possible by sponsoring the show. So if you want to compete at Challenge Roth next year, or if you are struggling with injury, then go and check out the show notes for further details of how they can help you. Thanks as ever to you if you are a patron of the show. It really does help me. Why not become one as well? Head over to patreon.com/InsideTryShow. Just buy me a coffee or a glass of wine every month, and it is greatly appreciated. But most of all, thank you for listening. So stay safe, look after yourself, look after those around you, and I look forward to speaking again next week.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.